This evening is the one pra, or the observance night. Then it just happens to be the last night that I'll be here for a while. So taking this opportunity to say goodbye. I'll be going to India for about 6 months. We're leaving tomorrow. Venerable Sujo and I are leaving tomorrow morning and flying to Bombay. And from there we'll head south to Kerala. I've never been to southern India. So this year has been, the sabbatical year has been very enjoyable, having been released from responsibilities and duties, having all the time in the world. So began this year with the winter's retreat and the attitude of conviviality. And so this was an attempt to encourage you to see the holy life as something beautiful and enjoyable, and to, open to it rather than just kind of shut down winter's retreat, noble silence, and go into the shutdown mode, which is generally what we do. Sometimes we see meditation as a way of shutting ourselves off from things rather than opening. Remember, whatever we say, whatever is said, is limited. So when we say shut down or open, these are only words that convey some meaning to you in whatever way you grasp them. And so in any religious tradition, any religion at all, there's a lot of confusion because they seem to be contradictory in many ways. So one moment they'll say, shut down, close your eyes, and concentrate your mind on your breath, and then they open up with metta for all sentient beings. So I just point out limitation of language, words, and conventions. When we grasp these conventions, then we tend to bind ourselves to a particular view, and we might be even encouraged to do so by teachers or by how we interpret scripture and so forth. So just to bring back that awareness, this is the center of the universe, this conscious moment right now. This is the open awareness that includes, when you see yourself in personal terms as somebody who needs to get something or get rid of something, then of course you limit yourself to that, to being somebody who has to get something that they don't have yet, or get rid of something they have that they shouldn't have. So we reflect on this. How many reflections have I given on, just the questioning of listening to your own personality, to your emotional states. Learning to be the witness, the butto, the aware, that which is awake and aware, rather than operating from a position of I'm a meditator who must get something that I don't have yet. I've got to attain certain states of concentration in order to get to other more advanced meditation practices. This whole scenario is not that it's wrong, but it limits you to always being somebody who's got to get something, attain something that you feel you don't have yet. Or are you going to the purification mode? I'm a sinner and I need to clean myself up. I need to purify myself. I've got to get rid of bad thoughts and bad habits and childish emotions, greed, hatred, and delusion, desire, and then we have to get rid of all that. But then it's somebody, isn't it, that you're assuming you are somebody who has these negative qualities that you want to get rid of. That's why this awareness, awakeness, sati sampajanya is a kind of essence. You know, when you want to, the essence of the Buddha's teaching is, and the butto is the awakened awareness. Moving towards simplicity rather than complexity. You know, we're already complicated personalities. You know, our cultural conditioning, social conditioning is usually very complicated. And we're educated. And we're literate. So we know a lot and we've learned a lot of things, had a lot of experience. And this means that, of course, we are no longer simple. We've lost that simplicity that we had when we were children. We become rather complicated characters. So recognize, like in the monastic form, it is a move to simplicity. And even though sometimes it looks complicated, it's not really the aim of it. All the whole thrust of the Dhamma Vinaya is towards simplifying simplicity rather than complicating everything. Then when the simplicity is wake up, you know, Buddha. Buddha means awake. So it's as simple as that. There's the profound teaching of the moment is wake up. What am I supposed to do next then? You complicate it again because we're not used. We know to being really awake, really being present. And we're used to thinking about things, analyzing, trying to get something, trying to get rid of something, achieving and attaining. So in the scriptures sometimes, somebody was enlightened just through a word or through something very simple. And then we think, how could, people can't do that these days. How do you know? How do you know? Why do you always think in terms of people in the past must have been somehow have more barami or more ability to awaken, to be fully liberated? Because we see ourselves through these complicated memories, perceptions. Just look at how complicated you are as a personality. Like, speaking for my personality is very complicated. Likes and dislikes, and it feels happy and sad, and it's so changeable. It can change just a snap of a finger. You know, somebody can, my emotions can be triggered off into anger just suddenly by somebody saying something. When the conditions arise, then anger, and then then the anger arises, or happiness, or elation. But through all that, in the lay with the sati sampatanya, what are we doing? We're learning to sustain an awareness that transcends these emotions. And if we couldn't do this, then there'd be no hope. There'd be no point in even trying with them. Being Buddhist monks or nuns or anything at all, we'd just be helpless victims of our habits, and there'd be no possible way out of it. The way out of it is awakeness, attention. So like conviviality is also a theme that it's goodwill, it's happiness, it's brightness, it's welcoming, it's opening. When I use that word, I mean like when I'm convivial, I'm open. When I'm in a bad mood, then I'm not open. Leave me alone, don't bother me, kind of thing. Or how we hold meditation, or Theravada Buddhism, or whatever conventions we're using. You know, people have very strong views. When they hold to any religious convention, they tend to form views around it. So in usually Theravada circles, you have strong views about where the original teaching, the pure teaching, or that you've got to do this in order to get that, and samsara and nirvana are polar opposites, and on like this, and the viewpoints, the ideas that we glean from holding to a tradition. But in the awakened consciousness, there's no convention in it. It's not a convention. It's dhamma. It's a natural way. It's not created. It's not dependent on conditions supporting it. So now you can see in Britain with the new Archbishop of Canterbury, all the problems of views and opinions that people have around what's going to happen to the Church of England. Because people have, you know, the evangelicals or the others, or those leaning towards more liberal views and those with very conservative orthodox views, they endlessly clash. All you can do is be at loggerheads with each other on that level. Because if you've already, holding to a view, then you're bound, you're limited by that very thing that you're grasping. So in awakened awareness, there's no grasping. It's a simple, imminent act of being here and attentive. Patient takes patience and trust. And learning to trust that in yourself. You know, no one can, you know, nobody can make you do it or magically kind of do it for you. So this sense of trusting this moment. So in my my own practice, I realized that because I'm of a skeptical mind, I'm a questioner, a doubter, a skeptic by nature. I'm not of faith. I don't believe easily. I tend to disbelieve or suspect. I'm suspicious of things. So with this kind of condition that I have to live with, it's pretty unpleasant, because you're always, you know, you'd love to believe in something and just kind of rest in a belief that you're fully committed to. But the advantage of the skeptical approach is that and that is, I think it's probably more, it seems, you know, it's a real challenge. It's quite interesting. And to be able to use that is learning to trust, not in any view or opinion or doctrine, but in the simple ability that each one of you is quite capable to practice with is awareness. Now, awareness includes concentration. When you do concentration practices, you put your attention on something and you shut out everything else. So like samatha practices, you're choosing an object and then you sustain and hold your attention on the object. With awareness, you're opening. It's broad. It's like a floodlight, wide open, and so it includes everything, and whatever, you know, everything belongs. The good mental state, bad mental state, pain, pleasure, anxiety, greed, hatred, and illusion, desire, space, consciousness. The physical body, emotional habits, right or wrong, good and bad, it all belongs. So in learning to trust in this awareness, then it's an act of faith. It's sadha, the Pali word sadha, but it's also very much aligned with panya and wisdom. It's something you have to experiment with, to begin to get a feeling for it. And no matter how well I might describe or expound on this particular subject, it's still not it, is it? It's something you have to know for yourself. So, like doubt, of course, is one of the main problems, because you don't trust yourself, and you do hold, many of you do very strongly believe you are the limitations of your past, your memory, your body, your personality. You're thoroughly convinced of that. Then you can't trust that. I can't trust my personality. It'll say anything. My emotions, can't trust them, they flicker around and change. Got them. Depending on whether the sun's out or it's raining or everything's going well or everything's falling apart, and emotions then, react accordingly. But then what I trust is this awareness, awakenness. Now, I've pointed out my own ways of doing this, and some of you get it, some of you don't. But at least I've done my best. But you know, this is something, because you can't really trust what I say either. You have to find out what works. If anything I say now is merely just to encourage, it's an encouragement, an attempt to encourage you to trust. So when you think of awareness that includes everything, you know, to me, that it's a very simple, it's nothing complicated. It's just totally natural. It's like, you know, the mind stops and you just kind of hear and open, receptive. Or even if your mind, you know, if your thoughts or your tense or uptight or whatever, mental state, you know, physical state you're in, you open to that by accepting it, allowing even tension or pain or despair, whatever you're experiencing, you're allowing it. You're not trying to get rid of it. And if you conceive this openness as kind of a happy state, and I'm just blissed out with open attention, and that then you're conceiving it as some kind of pleasant state that maybe you aren't feeling at all right now. But it's not even pleasant. It can be, you know, one can be in the pits of hell and misery and still open to it. By allowing even these states to be what they are. And this I found a challenge, because there's so many mental states, emotional states that I have that I don't like at all. You know, and I've spent my life trying to get rid of them. If you develop habits very quickly, you know, from childhood, any kind of mental state that doesn't seem right or seems bad or unpleasant, you want to get rid of it. Distract yourself, you know, distract my attention or do anything to get away from it. So, you know, in one's life, you know, you develop ways of doing that. Any kind of despair or unhappiness or depressing feelings or fears there's so many ways of distracting the mind that you aren't doing it even consciously, it becomes habitual. So then in our encouragement now is to begin to notice this. You know, even the way one distracts oneself is, you're opening to the way it is, not to the way you think it should be or the way you think it is. So it's a state of not really knowing anything in particular. Because in this awareness, it's not like you know anything. You're allowing things to be what they are, so you're not, you don't have to perceive them with words or thoughts or analyze them the way it is. It's developing this intuitive sense, intuition or intuitive awareness. And then the encouragement to trust it. When you begin to trust things, you can relax a bit. You know, if you're trying to control the mind, then you tend to go back to your habits of controlling and trying to get rid of things or hold on to things. rather than allowing things to be what they are. So in Vipassana meditation, anicca dukkha anatta is skillful means, a way of reflecting on conditions that we experience in consciousness itself. So we're taking our refuge in what we, in the awakeness, in this expansive awakeness, unlimited, it's infinite, it has no boundaries. Thought, whatever you conceive, is a boundary in itself, isn't it? The body itself is a boundary. You know, it's finite, and emotional habits are boundaries. Language and feeling, happiness, sukha vedana, dukkha vedana, tukamatsukha vedana, they're all conditions with boundaries dependent on other conditions. So what is transcending that, we began to recognize through awakening. So even if what I'm saying sounds like rubbish to you, be aware of that, you know. Open to the fact that you don't like what I'm saying. It's like this. It's not that you have to like it, but it's starting from the way it is, rather than that you should actually figure out what I'm trying to say, see. So I'll be going away in this sense of departure. And that brings a certain feeling to into our consciousness. Lei Lungpo is going away for 6 months. Maybe he'll never come back. Maybe he'll wander off like a sadhu in India, off into the Himalayas, and possible, isn't it? Certainly thought of it. Very romantic. I don't know what the realities would be like. But these are, you know, even before I'm gone, you can, you know, I'm sitting right here in front of you, you know, this sense of going away has a certain effect on consciousness. What is it, you know? Just get an openness to how those words affect you at this time, even while I'm sitting here. And it's whatever way it is for you, you know, it's that way. It is what it is. Separation, the idea of separation is like this. And so you're recognizing this, not judging. As soon as you add to it in some way, it's more than what it is. It becomes personal, it becomes emotional, it becomes complicated again. So in this realm that we're living in, the sense realm, this planet Earth is like this. There's always these experiences of meeting and separating. That this one's whole life is an endless procession of this, coming together, separating. And we get so used to it that we don't reflect, we don't notice. But in the separation from the loved, or what we like, or what we approve of, all that, there's always this sense of sadness. Because that's the way it is. Sadness is the natural state, that's how I see it anyway, of separating from what I like or love. So the awareness of that isn't sad, but the emotion that arises, it's different, isn't it? The emotion is one thing, but the awareness is, the sadness is in the awareness. Awareness isn't sad, but the emotion can be quite sad, like this. Or I can think, I'm going to India. That sounds exciting. 6 months in India, and then going to South India while you're freezing here in Amaravati, Sujama, lying on the beach in Kerala. Not the creation, the awareness isn't excited, is it? It holds the excitement. It embraces the feeling of excitement or sadness, but it's neither, it doesn't get excited or sad. So it's learning to trust in that awareness rather than just endlessly struggle with excitement or excited feelings or sad emotions or whatever. Have you ever noticed that even when you're a total basket case, there's something that is not you know, even when you feel you're at your wit's end, you're falling apart, and you're lost in everything's out of control. There's something that isn't, because there's an awareness of it. But if you aren't clear on this level, then of course you tend to attach and wind yourself up even more into, creating more and more complications when everything's falling apart for you, and you keep creating more and more complicated thoughts and feelings around it. But if you trust yourself to open to that, then you begin to find a way of liberating yourself from just being caught in these in the conditioned realm, just endlessly kind of propelled into emotional habits, fears and desires. Or like fear and desire. Desire itself is natural to this realm. This is a desire realm. So why shouldn't we have desires? What's wrong with desire anyway? And we can think we're struggling here to get rid of all our desires, try to purify our minds and conquer desire. And that becomes a personal kind of challenge, doesn't it? But can you do it? I can't. I can suppress desires sometimes. I can convince myself I don't have any, but I can't sustain it. Because this, I recognize that, when you contemplate the way things are, this realm is like this. What is attractive, beautiful, you desire to move towards it, to grasp it. What is ugly and repulsive is to move away from it. That's just the way it is. It's not some kind of personal flaw. So, but in that movement of attraction and aversion, there's an awareness that embraces both those. Because you can be aware of being attracted and aware that you're repelled by something. So learning to trust this awareness. It's subtle, so it's, you know, and it's simple. But if it's never pointed out, then we tend to operate through Buddhist meditation in this realm of achievement, attaining, getting rid of. We go back into this dualistic formation of struggle, trying to get rid of. Right and wrong, and good and bad. These how easily, you know, we get easily intimidated by righteous feelings. And when we're dealing with religion, it's so easy to get righteous, isn't it? Because we're, in one way, we're right. You know, we should let go of desire and we should take on responsibility for our lives and keep the precepts, and we should strive on with diligence. And this is right. This is good. And then somebody would say, accuse me right now. Some of you are probably thinking this anyway. Ajahn Sumedho is teaching a path where it doesn't matter. You know, you can just do anything, just watch it. You know, rob a bank, you can still be mindful of it, what you're doing. And you could experiment with drinking, getting drunk and taking drugs, see how mindful, how aware you are when you're hallucinating or on mushrooms or something. Doors wide open, isn't it? Then that's another way of thinking. You know, if you're caught in the righteous view, then you see, if I'm not promoting that particular viewpoint, then immediately you think the other, that I'm saying you shouldn't do that. But I'm not. You know, being taking on the precepts, whether it's monastic ones or lay people's precepts, that's a kind of vehicle that simplifies our lives, limits behavior, because if we don't have boundaries for behavior, then we tend to just get lost in you know, we have no way we don't know the limitations. So we can just follow any old impulse or idea or thing that we might feel inclined to in the moment. So that say vinaya or sila is always some form of restriction, isn't it? Restraint, holding, boundary on action and speech. So this is like a vehicle for reflection. If we use the vehicle as another thing, we can grasp the vehicle and not reflect on it. We become we obey all the rules, but we don't reflect on what we're doing. Is one extreme. So you become kind of institutionalized into a monastic form through, you know, the party line, the obeying all the rules, being a good nun, being a good monk, and then you can feel, you know, that that's what you're supposed to do. But you don't, you're not open to it. You're not really aware of what you're doing. So this trusting then is you know, the doubting mind, the thinking mind, the righteous mind, the suspicious mind will always question it. You know, you, some of you are probably thinking, well, I'm not ready for that yet. I need something, you know, that's an advanced, what you're saying is for advanced students only. And I need to just, you know, learn how to be a good monk and a good nun. Which is fine, learn how to be a good monk and a good nun, but the awareness of that. So that you're not trying to complicate yourself even more by adopting another role of the good monk or good nun, but learning within the restraint that is allowed within this vehicle to, you know, to observe, to see the resistance, the indulgence, the attachment, the aversion to it. It's like this. So it's like you're going beyond the dualistic structures. Like of thought and conditioned phenomena, you're beginning. You know, your refuge is in the deathless, in the unconditioned, in the Dhamma, rather than in somebody's view about Dhamma. So to do that, it takes this. Sense of trusting in the awakenedness of the moment. And test it out, you know. When I'm in India for the next 6 months, I have every opportunity to probably be challenged in many ways. And I don't have, you know, I live in this very nice kuti in the past few months. Lovely bathroom. Private. Only for me, private bedroom, underfloor heating, double glazed window. But in India, you know, going to the toilet there can be quite a difficult thing. And I know, I'll think of my toilet in Amaravati. You know, it's secure and convenient, where when you're traveling, you're out, kind of, you don't know what's going to happen. But then trusting in the awareness, you know, it's opening, so that you're able to respond to the experiences that you're having in hopefully suitable ways. I want to express my gratitude that you've all been incredibly supportive of my sabbatical and totally undemanding and protective. I feel very protected. I appreciate that. It's been very helpful, very useful too. So then Ajahn Sujo will go with me for 1 month, then he'll disrobe. So that, what does that do? You know, being aware of this idea of disrobing has a certain effect on the mind. Like this. Just to know that is enough. You don't, you know, just to be aware of that, of just that perception has this effect on my mind. That's all you need to know, you know, it's like this. So when someone disrobes, we have a certain feeling, you know, of which is this way. Now the refuge is in the awareness, rather than making a big deal about the perception, because we all have views and opinions about this subject. Now we all have strong feelings about staying in the sangha or disrobing. Many of you have doubts about whether you want to stay or go. And whatever you're experiencing, you know, have, you know, trust in the awareness of it rather than endlessly trying to figure it out. And, you know, as long as you're here and in the robe, then I encourage you to not feel you have to make such a decision until the time comes that you really want to decide that. But being aware, trust in the awareness, the vacillation or the doubt, or the guilt, or the whatever kind of emotion that subject arouses in you. But I really enjoyed having Ajahn Sujo here. He's been a great asset to this community, so he's, you know, one will miss him. But we also have to remember he contributed a lot to the welfare of our community here at Amaravati. So you can also, you know, recognize that and appreciate that. That way of thinking, what does that do in your consciousness when you start thinking in a positive way about it? So beginning to notice, you know, this awareness doesn't take sides. It's not for or against. It holds, it will hold these things, it'll embrace them. So that's why it is a refuge, because it's, you can trust it. If you're taking sides, you can't trust that. You know, I don't know how many monks have told me they would never disrobe and then do. I mean that. So that's not the point. The point of our life is not even to be a monk or a nun, but to be awake. And that is, you know, it's a very you know, this is something that you can do all the time. You know, it's not a practice just for the meditation hall or for the retreat. You know, learning to cultivate it, to trust it more and more. So over the years, I've develop this, so, you know, the conscious is very expanded. You know, there's a huge kind of spaciousness where that I can rest in, so that the conditions that I'm feeling, physically, emotionally, whatever, are reflected in that. You know, they're held in it, they're supported, they're allowed to be. If I don't develop this awareness, then it is difficult, because one's always struggling with one's feelings. You know, when the Sangha is going well and everybody says, oh, we love Amaravati and we want to be monks and nuns for life and Theravada Buddhism is the only way. Then they suddenly all say, we're fed up with this joint, let me out of here. I'm going to become a Jehovah's Witness. And you're down again. And then you've got to convince them, no, Jehovah's Witness is not the way. You'll never get anywhere with that. And you get into your righteous Buddhist mood about how deluded Jehovah's Witnesses are and how right we are and how you've got everything here. It's wonderful. And you should be grateful and dedicated. Don't be selfish. Another one, isn't it? Don't be stupid. So, because these are emotionally, we are like that. You know, if we're emotionally attached to the way we do things, then it is. You know, we're threatened by anyone who questions that. I found in my own life that, you know, whenever I get upset, somebody starts criticizing Theravada Buddhism or our Sangha or the way we do things or whatever, then I get upset. Because I've committed, you know, I've 36 years of my life to this. And somebody says, oh, there's a better way to do it. You know, can't be. You've all got to ordain and spend at least 36 years dedicated practice to get where I'm at. So that's the personality, isn't it? The personality, your attachment. You're committed, you're attached. You're identified with it. Can't trust that at all. I wouldn't trust it for anything. But I do trust awareness. And as you begin to recognize it, know it. I point to this sound of silence. As soon as you begin to aware of that, it's like when you sustain awareness with that, it expands, your consciousness becomes infinite. Conscious moment. And you lose, you know, the sense of yourself, you're being this person, this body, it drops away, it can't sustain itself. It has no ability to sustain the ego or the personality, or whatever you want to call it, can't sustain itself. It has no way of doing that. Emotional habits can't sustain themselves. They because their nature is impermanent. They arise and cease. So as you begin to recognize the value, realize the value of this expansiveness, then emptiness, they call it. Whatever, you know, whatever you choose to name it, doesn't matter, as long as you recognize it. Now it's a natural state, you know, it's not created. I don't create this. It's not, you know, like I have to go through a whole process of of concentrating my mind on something to do this and having to hold it and block out everything else. You know, I used to, when I was into concentration practices, I was always getting frustrated because you'd be just getting, you think, getting there right now, just first jhana. And then somebody slams the door. You know, so you know you're trying to shut out and control and limit everything. And that has, I mean, that kind of practice also has, you know, is skillful to do it. But if you hold to that only, then it limits you always. You can become incredibly kind of controlling of everything. You can't take life as it comes. You've got to have life only like this. It has to be, I have to be at this place. I can't live with those people. I have to have all these structures, these conditions, in order to be able to get my samadhi. And then you're bound to that. You see monks going all over the place trying to find the perfect monastery where they can get their samadhi together. But in this expansive awareness, it holds, and it's not everything belongs. So it isn't demanding, and it allows you to accept life as a flow rather than just endlessly frustrated when life seems difficult or unpleasant. So coming into the temple this evening, it was very nice indeed. You know, the stillness of this place is fantastic, isn't it? Really marvelous. This is the best place in the whole world. It's only an opinion, you know. It's not a pronouncement, but it does. I find it anyway. You know, the stillness, the silence in this place is palpable. As soon as you come in. But then can I spend the rest of my life sitting in here? You know? So then, even though it's the best place in the world, it's still, tomorrow morning I'll be leaving for India, which is noisy. But the stillness is here, you know, it's present, being present. It's not depending on a temple or a place. And this is where, you know, entrusting your awareness, you begin to notice this even amidst of London or Bangkok, a place like that, or confusing scenes or acrimonious scenes that one might be involved with. You can always find this, recognize this stillness once you value it and appreciate it. It does take that kind of determination. Much of the time it doesn't seem like anything. And having goal-oriented practices seems more attractive sometimes. I want something to do, you know, than to get my teeth into. Because that we're conditioned like that, to always be doing things, rather than trusting, opening to the present. We can even see that, you know, make that into another cause to live. I've got to open to the present all the time, you know, grasp the idea of it. That's not what I mean. And so with conviviality, it's like the attitude of of being at ease with life, of openness and ease with being alive and breathing and consciousness. If you grasp the idea I should be convivial, then you miss the point, isn't it? It's merely an encouragement in a direction to trust and relax and let go. Enjoy life here, you know, open to it, rather than, you know, endlessly try to make it, you know, the things we don't like about this place or the people in it, and so we can be obsessed with that. And then just that can bind us, limit us to an endless kind of critical attitude towards it. So if that's what we're doing, then we've missed the point. And as we open to it, even to our aversion to it, allowing aversion to it to be what it is. I'm not asking you not to be averse to it, but to open to that aversion or that restlessness or whatever positive or negative feelings you have, because they change. So I want to wish you all the best, I'll share the blessings and the merits of my pilgrimage in India with you all. And if any of you are wondering, will I come back? And I really want to come back, you know, I quite like living here. So, if my fate is such, I will be back.